this morning to Galatians and go to the first chapter of Galatians. I want to speak these next few moments on leaving room for God. Leaving room for God. There are a lot of things I teach that they have their own purpose. They have their own kind of plan. They have their own reasoning behind them. And one of the things is that God taught us in Romans to obey the laws of the land, obey the rules and the things that are set up. And most of the time, we would think, why is that even there? Why is that even put in place? It's like seeing a sign that says 55 miles per hour. And your car, just about with your foot off of it, goes 55 miles per hour. At least that's the way you tell the story. You know, it's kind of like, I can't even do 55 with this vehicle. I can't even make it go, you know, I have to put it in reverse to go 55, you know. And so the mindset is why is that so important to God to obey this, to obey that? I heard that this morning as Brother Sam was walking in and Johnny pulled up on his motorcycle. And I didn't know it, and me and Sam didn't know it, but they done passed a no-helmet law now in Mississippi. And Johnny was the first one to use it. And he was riding around without a helmet on, riding in the parking lot. And we just had to pick at him about it. He just had to cross the road, but we had to pick at him about it. And I didn't know they'd passed that law in Mississippi yet. And he just kind of, and then that's when Brother Sam had said, "Well, Pastor, when he taught on that going 55, you know, and all this kind of stuff," and he said, "And I know that was not easy at first. It was not difficult because I know when I had to go through that, and God told me, 'Look, you won't be blessed. You can't even obey the signs, you see. How are you going to obey me? There's a big old sign right there in front of your face that says, do this.' And you already said, 'I ain't going to do that.' I said, how in the world then you going to obey somebody you can't even see?" And man, God just wore me out with that. And it took me a long time. And now I drive. I remember John Austin and others, they'd like to come to church. And they'd get in behind me. And they would see exactly if I was going the speed limit or not. Now they would eventually pass me and go on. But at first they were like, they were going to check. They were like, "All right, he says he's going to go speed limit. And I'll be cruising through town going 45 or whatever." And then you just see him pass me and I just grinning, you know. But because people watch you. But there's another reason behind it that goes even further. And it's the ability to make room for God in your life. It's the ability, because our mindset, the way the world is geared now and how we do things, we just simply make the mistakes and say, "I'm sorry," later. That's the way our world is built. We just use the word, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." We just throw that out like it's no big thing anymore. Being sorry back years ago when I said it, or when it was people would say it to you, it meant something was fixing to change with it. In fact, my dad used to say that all the time to me. He said, "Son, don't say you're sorry unless you mean to do something about it." That used to be kind of a phrase that I'm sorry, and we go right on back and do it. "I'm sorry. I won't do it again. I'll do better. I'll do this." But I'll tell you why it is. It's not because they don't mean to or they don't want to. It's because of the pace of life. It's because they're moving so fast and trying to solve problems so quickly, just trying to find the quickest thing to take care of this so I can move on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. That's why if I get in my car, there's no way I can drive 55. I'm three stops behind. I've got eight things to get done. I don't have time to do that. I've got to get going. And in fact, I've even timed it in my mind. I did everything I could here, and it takes me exactly 15 minutes if I drive 85 miles an hour to get to the other place. So I've already got it planned, and now you're telling me to slow down and go 55. I won't make it in time. We live our whole lives this way. We live our whole lives pressing and pushing for the next thing and trying to get the next thing done. And then we wonder why in the process we don't ever feel God, or we never seem to have God, or God never shows up. It's because God has a timetable built all by Himself. And all the things that He puts in the Bible is to do one thing. It's to make sure you do not leave Him behind. God does not operate this way, and I know it's contrary to your thinking. But God does not wait for you to jump up in something, do all you're going to do, and then when you get so bogged down in it, look up and say, "God, would you help me?" God does not operate that way. Even though that's the way we teach and that's the way we preach to people, it's like, "Look, if you have a need right now, just ask God, He'll do it." Well, maybe. It depends how far ahead you are on Him. Because I've seen a lot of people in my life. I had a guy here the other day that had gotten out of a situation, kind of gotten out of jail. But the problem was, he was, as God was kind of revealing to me, it's not the right timing, Tim. He could get out on bail. He could get out this way. But the problem was, when he got out, he couldn't find a job. When he got out, he didn't have transportation. When he got out, he didn't have any way to move. All he did was, he ended up living in somebody else's trailer that didn't have any water, any electricity, anything, no way to take a bath, no way to do this. But he was out. What he had done was, he had jumped out of one fire, and he thought, I am free. Not really, now I've just jumped into this one. And when I was helping him one day, and I helped him and did some stuff for him, and just trying to be good, but the whole day it's like God's dealing with me. It's like, Tim, this isn't going to all get fixed in 1 second. It's going to take some time, and he don't want to take his time. And so by the end of the day, when I'd loved on him and done it, got him buttered up the best I could, I looked at him and said, look, you don't have this, you don't... If you thought about just going to your parole officer and just telling it, put me back in. And he looked at me like, huh? I said, you get baths. You get fed. I said, what are you going to do for the next week or 2 weeks? You know, where are you going to live? I don't know. I don't. It'll be dry in there. But the thought of having to wait on God, that's not my plan. I want God to bless my plan that I'm doing right now. And don't get me wrong, it would break my heart to have to go back in and to do that. I'm not trying to say that that's the greatest option. I'm just telling you, in all my praying, it's like, He's ahead of me, Tim. I can't fix everything in his life. I can't get him a job, get him a car, get this, get that, get everything fixed in 2 days. I can't do, because of all that he's done to get himself to right here. He's now got to walk back through with me. And you know what? My ways probably won't look like what he would like. Because what he likes got him here. What I like will probably put him through. Paul would have looked at him and said, look, I did some of my best work sitting in jail. I wrote 2/3 of the New Testament sitting in jail. It wasn't my plan, but God somehow thought, that's a pretty good idea. You can't get hurt. You're safe. They're going to just have to leave you alone, give you all the paper. You got all the peace and quiet you need. You can talk to me and write all you want to. Can't do that while you're getting stoned, Paul. Can't do that while you're getting shipwrecked, swimming for your life. No, I just need to get you in jail. I just need to get you situated where I can work with you. See, our ways and God's ways seem so strange to us. In fact, Paul, when you talk to him, notice how he will say this about himself. Go with me to Galatians, and let's begin to read at verse 13 in chapter 1. And let's just hear it from Paul's own mouth, if you don't think I'm saying it right. For ye have heard my conversation in times past, that in the Jewish religion, how that I, beyond measure, I persecuted the church of God and wasted it. Keep me rolling. All the way to verse 17. And profited in the Jews' religion above many my equals in my own nation, being exceedingly what? Zealous. It's zealous means I'm a go-getter. I'm on a good. And that was Paul. He was a go-getter. He didn't waste time. He didn't have time to think about it. Just get it done. And he couldn't understand people that didn't get it done. He said, I was zealous of the traditions of my father. Verse 15. But when it... He stops right there and says, guys, man, I'm telling you, I was busy. I was rolling. I was doing it. But when it pleased God. In other words, when God finally got to the right time in my life and got to the right place in my life and decided it's time. Why didn't he do that when he was stoning Stephen? It wasn't time. Why didn't he do that when he was going into people's houses and dragging them out and putting them in jail and having them persecuted and some of them killed? It wasn't the right time. Well, God should have speeded up the time. God shouldn't have let all that happen. No, God has perfect time. God has His own seasons and His own time. And it will always contradict with us. How come me and my husband are not quite... Because it isn't time yet. You still got to stay in there. You still got to keep praying. You still got to work harder. You still got... It isn't time yet. How come my kid? I'm doing everything I know to do, Brother Lot. Because it isn't time yet. One thing I've learned about raising kids is that you can't speed it up. When I was younger and I had Taylor, I wanted him to learn wood cutting. At 8, 9 years old, I'd have him out there running saws, and he'd think, "Man, I don't like the noise. It's too loud. It's scary. I don't want to." And I'm thinking, "Fine, you don't want to do it. Just go on." Now he's 16, and he comes to me now, and he says, "I'm thinking about joining the VOTEC." And I said, "VOTEC? What are you going to do at VOTEC?" He said, "I got a carpentry class." They got a carpentry class, huh? Yeah, they'll teach you how to build stuff. And they'll teach you how to, and they're going to teach us electrical. And I was thinking, Taylor, what day of your life would you ever want to walk out in the yard with me and I can't teach you any of those things? But it wasn't the right time. Now, at 16, he's interested in stuff that I done got mad at him about for 5 years. And that's the way it is in our lives. Kids have taught me a great deal. I'm going to tell you, it has been the greatest burden in my life, my family. And I'm going to say this honestly, because I grew up a hermit. I grew up, if you wanted something done, just tell me what you want done and get out of my way and I'll tell you when it's done. That's the way I'm built. And then God surrounded me with four beautiful people, loving people that want to be part of my life. And they're all good. I'm the messed up one. I know that. I it's not a doubt in my mind. It's not that they're I'm the one messed up. I know it. I just can't quite get my handle on it. And it's like they won't move when I move. They won't go when I go. They don't want to get in the car when I want to get in the car. They don't want to. They're always behind or they're ahead or they want stuff done that I don't care nothing about. And it's like, God said, "Are you learning, Tim? Are you learning? Are you learning how to flow? Are you learning how to set a pace? Are you learning how to drive 55? "Yes, Lord, I am." It is. But it's all good because what God is saying is that, "Tim, if you're too far ahead of me, it's going to hurt you until I get there. If you're too far behind me, you'll miss those moments in your life. What I'm trying to teach you is to be with me, around me, hearing me, walking with me." We can go to story after story where people left room for God. Whether it's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they know they're fixing to be thrown into a fire. But when they're fixing to be thrown into a fire, they leave room for God. They look at the king and they say, "Look, you're probably going to throw us in here and we're probably going to die. I mean, duh. Get thrown into a fire, you're pretty much going to die. But let it be known, O king, that we're not going to bow. And let it be known that if our God wants to, if God just gets a mind to, He'll save us from this fire." It's leaving room for God. It's like a little woman who builds a little room on for the prophet just because she feels connected and wants to be connected so that when he comes by, he'll stay at that place and not wanting blessings, just leaving room for God in her life. We can go to any story in the Bible and what separates them, whether it's David, you think David is this great warrior and he's this great battler. He wins all his battles. But you listen very carefully. A lot of his battles were won because he was on time with God. He sits under the mulberry bushes one time and God says, "Don't attack them until you see me, until my angels, until we come through the mulberry bushes. Don't you go ahead of me. You sit right here with your horses and all of your cattle, cavalry and everything you got." And the Bible says David sat there with his army until he felt the wind and felt the angels and felt them coming through the mulberry bushes. Then he said, "We can go." It is waiting on God at the right time. David could have went on in there and started fighting and God would have got there eventually, but he may have lost half his army before God got there. But David knew, if I can just wait on God, just drive 55, if I can just stay in pace with God, then God will come along and God will fix what I cannot fix. I can't look at something and say, "Oh, it's no use." Don't do that. Look at it and say, "You know what? I'm just going to have to leave it
it right now. I'm going to have to just kind of left it set right now. God's going to have to show up and take it to the next level. I'm not quitting on it. I'm not stopping on it. I'm just telling you, I can't fix it. Whether it's my marriage or my kids or my job or this and that. I'm not bailing on God. I'm not saying God won't do it. I'm just saying, God, I can't do it. But I'm just going to wait on You. I'm just going to wait for You to show up and You to do something and You to make a miracle out of this. I don't know Your timing, but I know You want to do something good. So I'm waiting on You to get it done. This is so important. Paul, listen how he says this. But when it pleased God, who separated me from my mother's womb and called me by His grace to travail, reveal His Son in me that I might preach Him among the heathen, immediately I conferred with no flesh and blood. Neither went I up to Jerusalem to them which were apostles before me, but I went to Arabia and returned again unto Damascus. Paul said, I didn't have anybody that could tell me how fast to run. I didn't have anybody to tell me how quick to get in the ministry. If he had went to Peter, Peter then probably would have said, look, Paul, you need to sit here for about 15 years because you got a bad reputation and all this going on. You're not ready for ministry yet. You need to go to some seminary or do this or do that. And Paul says, no. When I got saved, when God saved me, I went to a different location. I went somewhere where I could spend time with Him. Because what I wanted to be able to do was to be able to hear Him and follow Him and know I'm connected to Him. And it was life-changing for Paul. Most of what we read in the New Testament, Paul's writing, is those 3 years he spent in Arabia, walking along the mountains that Moses walked on, walking along the places where Abraham walked, and he walked it out. And what he did was, he took the Old Testament, which he could quote. He was a master of the Old Testament, so he could quote most all of it. As he walked along, he would quote it, and he transferred it, and realized how that Old Testament picture was really a picture of Christ. When he's standing there, and Abraham is fixing to kill his son, and he's thinking that story in his mind, and God says, do you see the story? Abraham was willing to give his son. That released me to be willing to give my son. That released me to be able to provide a ram. That ram that they found in the thicket, that was my son. That was the sacrifice that was given. Nobody paid for it. Nobody bought it. Nobody earned it. It was given. And Abraham sacrificed something that didn't cost him nothing. He saved his own son by simply receiving what I had given. And you can see Paul on those mountains, his mind just like, my goodness, I can't understand. That was all in there, but I never saw it. It was all in there, but it took time, and it took spending time with God to realize it. Now, let's see if I can show it to you in a story form. Go with me to Mark, the 9th chapter. Mark, the 9th chapter, in verses 1 and 2. Being able to make room and give room to God, and leaving room for Him to be able to work in our lives. And He said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, that there be some of them that stand here which shall not taste of death till they see the kingdom of God coming with power. And after 6 days, look at the person beside you and say, after 6 days, Jesus taketh with Him Peter, James, and John, and leadeth them up into a high mountain, apart by themselves. And He was transfigured before them. 6 days, He just rests. It ain't time yet. It's just not time. 6 days, He sits around, laughs and jokes, and sits by the campfire and eats dinner. But on the 6th day, He looks at them and says, hey, you three, I want to show you something. Come on, let's go up to this mountaintop. And on that mountaintop, they see things that are just mind-blowing. They see Jesus turn totally white, hair white, everything white, starts to glow. They see Moses and Elijah standing on both sides. They see them talking to each other. They hear the voice of God saying, this is my son, listen to him, obey him. I mean, they see some incredible things. But it all happens because it's God's timing and God's place and the season that God says, it's time. 5 days earlier wouldn't have worked. 3 days earlier wouldn't have worked. It had to be on that time, that day, that moment. Why? Because something else was happening at the same time. Jesus leaves the other 9 down there among the city.
And they're doing their own thing. We hear a story that takes place here that's very important. And I want you to see this story because this story is all about God's timing. And how you in your mind have to be able to deal with the timing and hang on to the greatest nth to watch God do something. This man shows up with his son. There's 9 disciples sitting there. This man has finally caught up with Jesus, finally found this prophet that everybody's talking about, that's healing people, but he realizes Jesus isn't there. He's just got 9 of his men there, and he looks at them and says, "Look, I came to find Jesus, and I came to get my boy healed." While Jesus is being transfigured up top, they're laying hands on this boy. And I've been in services like this. It's as much discouraging as it is encouraging sometimes. You ever been in church service like that? I mean, somebody will pray for somebody but don't feel a breakthrough, and then somebody else will come walking up and want to lay hands on them. Man, I've been in service the last 2 hours where people are praying for each other and stuff, and you'd pray for somebody and you'd ask them, "You feel any better?" You'd, "No, no," and you'd walk away, and somebody else would walk up and, "Here, let me lay hands on it." And then 2 or 3 would lay hands on it. And you could see these 9 guys, they are pulling out everything they've ever seen Jesus do. If he sprinkled water on somebody, they done done it. If they had everything they have seen Jesus do, they are doing it. They're trying to remember how Jesus said it. They're trying to remember the right words. They have done everything, exhausted themselves. All they've done is created a bigger crowd of people that are kind of looking around like, they ain't having much luck, are they? Isn't that Jesus' disciples? Yeah. They can't heal that one little old boy. The Pharisees show up. And they start debating, "Why are you laying hands on him?" Well, because this is what Jesus told us to do. Well, who does Jesus tell you how to pray for somebody? You're not doing it right. Man, there's so much confusion going on. About that time, Jesus comes walking over the hill. He sees the crowd. It's a mess. He walks down, and first thing he begins to say within himself is, "Oh, this messed up generation. How long am I going to be with you?" He finally gets to the Father after he deals with the Pharisees and deals with everybody else. And finally gets to the Father, and here's this dad who's his whole life he's done everything he knows to do. I mean, he's done everything but tie his boy down so he don't hurt himself. Jesus says, "Well, tell me about this situation." Have you ever had to tell somebody, you ever get a diagnosis of something, cancer or, you know, a bad tooth or something? And it's like, it seems like everybody wants to ask you about it. And one of the most frustrating things is I have to tell one more person. "Well, I heard the news. Tell me about it." "Well, I went to the doctor 3 days ago. Doctor said I'm going to die. I'm ready to die now. I don't have to tell nobody about this no more." And Jesus, of all people, knows what's going on. Knows. He don't have to ask this guy about this boy. He looks at this guy and says, "Tell me. Tell me about it." And this guy looks at Jesus. And he says, "I came to your disciples. I have a boy. He has epileptic seizures. He has seizures. Spirits come upon him, evil spirits. And when they do, they try to throw him into the fire. We've had to just about quit having fires and campfires and having him around it because it'll come on him and he'll try to jump in the fire. We used to go camping and stuff. You know, I used to take my boy down by the creeks and the ponds and stuff, but we had to be very careful about that because if that spirit comes on him while he's around the water, he'll try to jump in and drown himself." You can see the mental pictures of this man as he's telling the story and he's rehearsing it in his mind, all that he's seen. I'll tell you something, if your marriage is not good, when you start talking about it, you start playing in your mind all the arguments and you start playing in your mind all the things and all the fusses and the time she hit you with a shoe and everything that went wrong. And that's what he's doing. Jesus is pulling at him at the worst place he could. This is his boy.
It's his son. It's his future. It's the one he's going to give his farm to. This is the one he's supposed to leave his inheritance to. And he looks at that Jesus and he says, I mean, how far do you want me to go? We can't get him near water. We can't get him near fire. We can't. I mean, it's just a mess. I mean, I came to your disciples. They laid hands on him. They did everything. Holy water, you name it. They spit on him. They done everything they could do. No good. Your disciples couldn't heal him. And I love this statement. When Jesus begins to talk to him, do you believe that I can heal him? There's times you have to just wait for God. And it doesn't mean it's pretty, and it doesn't mean it looks good all the time. I remember me and Elise, when we were going through our, what we call, desperation stage of our marriage, every marriage does. That was not a pretty time. We loved each other and all those things, but man, we didn't like each other. We didn't feel like we were pulling in the same direction. We went off to a marriage conference and did all that, and that was the last thing I wanted to do. I thought it's another. I mean, how many people have I counseled? I know what they're going to tell us. I know all the night. I can give you all. And Elise would even say that. She'd look at me and say, you fix everybody else's. What advice do you give us? And I'm like, man, that's not what I want to hear. But I'm glad we did, because that was the exact weekend that God showed up. He didn't show up a week before. He didn't show up 2 weeks before. He didn't show up when we were fussing in the kitchen. He didn't show up at none of those moments. He showed up while we were sitting there listening to other couples. And it just happened to be a couple, I remember. And they stood on the stage together. And when they were telling their story, and it was ugly and it was bad and all they'd been through and all the and how God had brought them through, it just something clicked in me. It's like the wind come through the mulberry bushes. And I felt God in front of me. That's one of the greatest weekends of our lives. I still remember that weekend. Because God showed up. And He brought us out of where we were into our next season. Why didn't He do it a week earlier? I could have saved $200 or $300. Wouldn't even have gone. God said, it ain't time yet. You just keep loving and pressing and believing. And I know what that guy feels like. I've been there so many times in my life where God, it's ugly now. And He looks at me and He says, you think I can fix this, Tim? God, I don't know what you can do now. It's probably gone too far now. Anybody ever said that? It's probably done gone too far now. It's learnt now, God. Ain't no use in worrying about it now. It can't be fixed now. And this guy feels that way. He's tired of seeing his boy fall in the fire. He's tired of watching all this. And he looks at Jesus and he says, I believe. I believe, but help my unbelief. The struggle of getting to this moment has taken so much out of me. The struggle of believing that You will show up and then coming and You not here, and then having people pray for Him and it didn't work, it's taken a lot out of me. And I ask You to help my unbelief. Because that's really what it's about, on waiting for God. The reason I drive 55 is because I know there's a cop somewhere. And I have to convince myself that he's probably right on the other side. That keeps me where I'm at. Last night we were driving home and me and Taylor got over the hill and there was somebody pulled over. And I said, aren't you glad you didn't have that $150 lesson? He just smiled and he said, I ain't got $150. I said, oh, today was a good day, wasn't it? I said, what if you had took all of your birthday money and pay for one more lesson? Would that have been a good day? No. I said, the thing about living for God is that I live each day believing that He's right over the hill. I live living the way I live because I believe He's one step away. He's one moment away.
He's just one prayer away. He's one, and you know what? He usually is around the corner. He's usually right around the corner. Not the corner I expected, but two corners down. And when this guy finally gets to Jesus and he finally shares and he says, "Look, I'm believing with all I can right now. I'm here. If you can do anything." The Bible says Jesus spoke to that spirit, commanded it to come out of that boy. The boy falls, is dead. In fact, the people around think he died. He just went into such convulsions and hit the floor like a dead man. Jesus reaches down, and the Bible says with a strong hand, He grabs him and picks him up. The boy's fine. There are moments in your life, maybe you're in one right now, where it's not whether you can solve your problem like that. It's not whether you can come up with a quick escape. Really the question is can I drive the speed limit? Can I do what I'm supposed to do and live the way I'm supposed to live and act the way I'm supposed to act and wait for God to do the big thing? That's hard for us every day of our life. I know what we need to do. I know what I'm for. I know what... And then when we get into it, what do we always do? Lord, You've got to help me. God said, how about this time? You do what you know you're supposed to do. Just do what you're supposed to do. Don't go beyond it. Don't fall slacking behind it. Just the things I've taught you to do, the way I've taught you to treat people, the way I've taught you to treat your boss, the way I've taught you to treat your wife, the way I've taught you to treat your husband, the way I've taught you to treat your kids, the way I've taught you to live, the way I've taught you to drive, the way I've taught you to act, and just wait on Me to do the bigger thing that you can't do yourself. Now what I'm teaching you is something that doesn't come easily in a week. Sam, I still drive over 55 sometimes. I still have to look down sometimes and go, ooh. And there'll be times in your spiritual life that you'll be thinking, ooh, I'm pushing way. I don't even feel God in this stuff anymore. I need to slow down just a little. I just need to wait on Him. Evelyn, sometimes we just got to slow down and just say, you know what, God, You already got it. I just don't need to stress out. I don't need to lose my cool. I don't need to change my testimony. I don't need to change my... I just need to wait. And just wait on God. There's somebody in this room today that I was supposed to say this to. Whatever it is you're pushing, whatever it is you're trying to change in a minute, maybe it's your marriage, your life, your kids, your job. I don't know what it is. But I know this much. God says, I have perfect timing. Paul would tell you that when it pleases Him, He'll be there. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego says, He'll show up when He wants to show up. Daniel will tell you, you know what? If it's time to close a lion's mouth, He'll do it. He won't show up early and He won't show up late. He'll show up just at the right time. The only person that has to deal with the stress of it is me. And what you're feeling right now is not your world falling apart. What you're feeling right now is not that you're doing something wrong. What you're feeling right now is the stress of waiting on God. Something most Christians and people won't do. They'll leave this room today and they're just going to say, look, I've waited long enough. We just need to do something. Just wait. Just wait. And let Him do the good thing. Will you stand? If you're in this room today, you say, Pastor, that's me. I've given up on things just because they're not moving at my speed or not solved the way I want them solved. I keep asking God why He's not here already. Maybe He don't care. Maybe He just wants me to figure it. Maybe He just wants... This morning I realize It's my job to just drive 55. It's my job just to wait on the Lord. I know we quote that scripture all the time from Isaiah, but I wonder sometimes, do we really believe it? Those that wait on the Lord, He will renew their strength. They'll mount up as eagle's wings. They'll run and not grow weary. They won't faint. They won't give out. God in my life, through my family, this building, people I work with every day, in all that He puts me through, He's trying to teach me one thing. Tim, learn to move at my speed. Paul would tell you, I was a zealous man. I was somebody who just wanted to go get it done. Paul even wrestled with some of that in his own ministry. You can read about it in Acts. But one thing Paul learned, God one time put something on Paul, and Paul prayed three times for it to be removed. Paul being zealous, God, if you just do this, I'll tell you, I'll be a better Christian. If you just do this, I'll do more work. If you just do this, Lord, I go to church twice as much. You know what God's response was? He said, Paul, my grace is sufficient. My strength is made perfect in your weakness. In other words, Paul, it's not my timing. That's not the speed I want to run. And this morning, there's some of you in this room, you've got to desperately. You're going to drive yourself crazy if you don't run at His speed. At work, in your home, and with your family. You're going to drive yourself crazy. Because God's going to always be two steps behind you. You're going to wonder why He don't love you and move faster. I want you to right now, every head bowed. I know this is a different type of prayer, an altar call. But if you'd like to this morning, to just step out, and it's not about you coming and saying, I'm a sinner, I'm a horrible person. What it is stepping out this morning saying, God, I have so many things in my life. But I do want to do this more than anything. I want to move at your speed. I want to make sure I hear you come through the mulberry bushes. I want to make sure I feel you come moving through me before I make decisions, before I run off the road, before I go faster than I should, as I'm raising my kids, as I'm loving the people in my life, as I'm being the best employee or boss or whatever I'm supposed to be. God, let me move at your speed. Don't let me be in such a hurry that I miss you. And then like so many people, I have to stick my head up and say, God, would you fix what I've got into? This morning, I want to make sure I'm moving at your speed. If you're here and you say, I feel like I'm moving too fast, or I'm just giving up too quick, or me and God just are not in gear, then take a moment. Slow down just a moment. Don't worry, you can get in your car in a few minutes and run back into your world. But just for a moment, why don't you take a break, slow down, and invite God into the middle of what you're doing right now. These altars are open. If you say, Pastor, right now, I just want to take a moment and do that. I need to. You don't know what's going on in my life, but God.